All right, welcome to the show. Others receiving votes. I'm Pat Forty, joined as always by Brian Fisher and Kevin Sweeney from Sports Illustrated. You can find our work at SI.com. We got pretty good response last week to doing a State of the ACC show. So we're going to continue with that. We're doing the Big Ten this week. Brendan Sorsby doesn't play quarterback in the Big Ten, but we're also going to be keeping our eyes open for any developments in his eligibility issue with the NCAA as they try to get out from under a potential mountain of gambling issues there for the quarterback of the Red Raiders. But today we're going to be all about the Big Ten. And I'm going to start with this before I go to you guys. Their meetings, we're trying to time this with the timing of the conference's meetings, spring meetings. Last week was ACC at Amelia Island at the Ritz-Carlton. The Big Ten, Palos Verdes, California, the Tirania Resort. Once again, nobody in college sports has enough money until it's time for a meeting somewhere. And then they are not going to the Iowa City Convention Center or the State College Inn or anything like that. We are at the Tirania Resort. There's 8 restaurants there. It's right overlooking the ocean. You can get a Citrus Glow facial. You can get a Honey Body Bliss treatment. Only $324 for 60 minutes for that one. So, you know, they're keeping things tight and tidy there at the Big Ten. They also do have the most money, as we have seen, and lately the most championships. I think it's pretty good to be the Big Ten right now. That's for sure. Fellas, tell me, in the conference hierarchy, the national current conference hierarchy, Big Ten, trending up, trending down, or steady? Where is it? Brian Fisher.
Well, number one, it's a lovely resort, and I'm headed their way just in a little bit after we're done taping here to attend some of those Big Ten meetings. I'm sure some of the wives of some of those football coaches and athletic directors are going to enjoy some of those facials. I have no doubt, as well as some of the golf courses for some of those athletic directors as well around the area. But it's good to be king, right? If you're the Big Ten, you're number one. And it's not just in football. It's certainly men's basketball, which they've finally gotten over that hump for the first time in basically a quarter century. So you know what? In terms of the national hierarchy, it's the Big Ten and everybody else. You know, they are winning on the field. They are winning in the pocketbooks and in the checkbooks and everything that you can imagine. And it's a new era, you know, for the Big Ten currently in terms of where they're at nationally relative to their peers. And certainly on the field, you know, that is the case.
Yeah, I mean, you in the last year, you've rebutted two of the only arguments left, which is, well, it's just Ohio State and Michigan in football. What about everybody else? Well, somebody else just won a national championship. And then, well, that basketball conference, it's overrated. They never win the big one. Well, here comes the Wolverines to dominate through the NCAA tournament and get the monkey off the back of the conference in the NCAA tournament in men's hoops. So, yeah, it has earned the number one spot. I think it will, quite frankly, take quite a lot to get overtaken as number one. I think this is this is at least for the next couple years, the status quo, Big Ten and everybody else.
I forgot to mention a few other things at the Tirania Spa, by the way. The signature journeys you can go on. 120-minute Crimson Revival Holistic Sauna Retreat. A 90-minute sound and silence journey.
The SI expense accounts are not what they used to be, but do we think I should test any of these out while I'm down there waiting for everybody?
You know what? You're going to be there. Walk in. Sure.
I'm going to be there for a couple hours. So
yeah, the sound and silence thing. Let's try that one. You take a breath, inhale, and reset. You pause life for a moment to ensure that you bring your whole self to a grounding experience. The beauty of balance is the aim of this full body massage that is combined with sound therapy, with slow rhythmic movements to invite balance and harmony to the body. I mean, who doesn't want that? So I highly recommend you stop by the Tirania Spa for a signature journey, Brian, while you're there. As for the conferences standing, yes, they are 100% number one across the board. As Kevin pointed out, football is not just a Michigan-Ohio State operation now. Indiana just went 16-0 and won the championship. Oregon was the number one seed in the 2024 playoff. The old argument was that it was too top heavy, and you can still say there's a little bit of that, but there's a lot of good teams and a lot of good programs and a lot of places throwing around a bunch of money there. The only other conference that's ever had three different teams win three straight national championships, the SEC did it twice, 2019 to 2021 with LSU, Alabama, and Georgia. And in 2007-09 with LSU, Florida, and Alabama. So they have joined the very rare air there of people who can show that sort of diversity at the top. And, you know, with Indiana doing it, that's the mind wrecker for a lot of people, is that when you can take what was objectively the worst program in the Big Ten and suddenly become the best, and not just the best in the Big Ten, but the best in the country. Yo, things can happen there. Obviously, yes, Michigan totally changed the can't win the big one narrative for the conference, winning the first championship in 25 years in men's basketball, and did it in dominant fashion, and has a coach who stands to be really hard to beat for many, many, many years, as long as he wants to coach in college, and is happy there. Illinois made the Final Four, had a great season. Several other teams in that league look in great shape, and their programs are in great shape. They won the women's championship, and the women's championship drought had been longer than the men's. It goes back to 1999. Purdue was the last time they had won an NCAA women's title. So the annexation of UCLA paying dividends, the annexation of Oregon paying dividends, USC's won some titles. Washington has not been a negative by any means. So the expansion, while the ruination of the Pac-12 was not worth it in, for the whole state of things, it was very much worth it for the Big Ten. So yes, number one, it's passed out $1 billion in revenue. All right, let's talk football. What are the league's strengths right now from the football perspective, Brian?
Well, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit there. You know, to have Indiana going into last season, the worst Power Five program in terms of losses and wins, to win the national title, you know, and go undefeated. I think that speaks a lot to what the Big Ten, you know, currently is in terms of, you know, not only being top heavy, but having elite teams, you know, right now. And it's not just Indiana, and it's not just Ohio State like usual. It's not just Michigan as usual. You know, it's a collection of teams that are truly challenging for the national title. Oregon consistently knocking on the door of being a national title contender, getting to a semifinal. You look at USC and what they've been able to do. They are back on track as a program under Lincoln Riley, finally kind of delivering the promise of his hire, you know, number one recruiting class in the country. They're going to be in probably the top 15 of pretty much every preseason poll. So that's another contender that you have on top of a pretty solid middle class. You know, your Iowas, your Illinois coming off to two really good years under Brett Bielema. You have challengers, you know, like a Washington, you know, Nebraska's, you know, kind of gotten a little bit over the hump in terms of what Matt Rhule has been able to do there and get them at least back to two bowl games. You know, you have a pretty solid middle class there. Certainly there's some disappointments these last couple of years. You know, Penn State has not been, you know, to the level that you want Penn State to be, but, you know, there's been strides made, you know, I think in terms of having that depth that the Big Ten that frankly got knocked up, you know, for past years in terms of not having those teams beyond the Ohio State and Michigans of the world. But, you know, I think they've made some strides there. There's been investment, certainly from a roster standpoint, as well as from a coaching standpoint. We're seeing some of the bottom teams as well, you know, turn things around as well. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, Bob Chesney at UCLA, some of these other hires that have come into the conference brought in a new approach to some new blood as well. So football wise, you know, it's not quite where the SEC was or quite where the SEC is, frankly, in terms of top to bottom depth. But, you know, they're pretty good at the elite in at the top of the league. And you know, I think they're improving top to bottom. So good things to say, I think, in terms of football and where the conference is ultimately pointing at in terms of their trajectory.
I also think about just the coaches and the resumes of the coaches that are coming into the conference at this stage, right? That to me is something that stands out when you look at the Big Ten versus the SEC. Obviously, LSU poached Lane. That was a huge deal. But you think about the other top resumes on the move. It's Matt Campbell going to Penn State. It's Kyle Whittingham going to Michigan. Michigan State to get Fitz. Like, you go up and down. Like you're getting some really proven winning coaches in this conference as these jobs turn over in a way that the SEC, quite frankly, isn't yet. Obviously, like, Summerall and Golesh and a lot of these guys have very good resumes. They're strong up and comers, but it's a different world. And I think the fact that the Big Ten, with its, especially particularly with premier jobs, are getting guys that are proven winners at the highest level of the sport, I think is a pretty strong endorsement for kind of where the winds are blowing at the moment and where people want to be. And I think, these jobs are very, these jobs are very desirable at the moment because of, not only the access to resources, but the access to competing for championships and everything that comes with that. I also think I think the bottom of the league is probably a little bit better positioned than the bottom of the SEC long term because of the desirability of some of the jobs. Right. I mean, you think about like UCLA, for instance, that's a program that like has access to a lot of money, has access to location and resources that way that like a Mississippi State can't compete with, right? Northwestern has its academic challenges, but like if you're asking someone where they'd rather live between a bottom SEC job and Evanston, I think most would probably choose Evanston, right? I think you go up and down the list of, Rutgers is the shadow of New York City, right? Like Maryland's in the shadow of DC. Like these the programs that have struggled in the Big Ten in football, I think don't have it quite as, they don't have a super high ceiling, but they probably have a higher ceiling than the bottom of the SEC's teams. And I think we've seen that now with Indiana's rise. Not to say that any of these teams are going to become the next Indiana. I think there's going to be a lot of people that get fired over the chase of the next Indiana over the next 10 years. But I think there is a clearer path to energy and relevance at some of those places than maybe some of the bottom of the SEC jobs.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the next Indiana may prove to be nobody, and the chase to be that could be fool's gold.
What's more likely, next Indiana, next Gonzaga? What do you think?
Good question. I like that. We can discuss that thought experiment. But yeah, that's something that that athletic directors aspire to, and donors sit around and say, "Well, if Indiana can do it, we can do it." But I mean the secret sauce is something. I mean, trying to actually come up with it. And I will say, one of the great strengths of the conference is a guy like Kurt Cignetti goes 16-0 and is like, yeah, I'm staying here. I'm not going anywhere. And I'm keeping my coordinators, both of whom have done phenomenal work for him. Bryant Haynes, defensive coordinator, Mike Shanahan, offensive coordinator. They lost a couple other guys who are talented coaches. Strength coach went to Tennessee. But to keep the core of that group together, shows that they do not look at Indiana as a stepping off point, or that was a one-off or a blip or anything like that. They feel like that's a place they can just keep winning. Dan Lanning has made it very clear he wants to stay at Oregon if he's coaching college football. So having him there has been, the continuity there. Ryan Day, if he ain't going to the NFL, he's staying at Ohio State, and having him there. And yes, to you guys' points, I think there were some very good hires of coaches within the league. Matt Campbell had taken Iowa State to a Big 12 championship game. Pat Fitzgerald had taken Northwestern to a Big 10 championship game. Bob Chesney took James Madison to the college football playoff. Kyle Whittingham has won championships and had undefeated seasons. So you've got guys, as you said, Kevin, your point I thought was good, that, like the Summerals and the Golushes, they may turn out to be good. They don't quite have as much proof of concept as all of the Big Ten guys maybe do to this point. So I think that one of the great strengths of the league is not just where they've been, but where they appear to be positioned to go. And we've discussed, you know, significantly, I think the potential, you know, donor pots of gold at these schools tend to be bigger than any place else. You've got larger alumni bases. You've got maybe a little bit more affluent alumni bases. And if they tap into them, good things can happen. They don't have to all be Mark Cuban or Larry Ellison. I mean, you can find enough other people that are filthy rich that want to see their teams win. So things are good. Any weaknesses, Brian, anything you don't like about Big Ten football at this point?
Well, you know, I think there's probably the reputation in terms of the style of play, you know, generally that you could say it's certainly a little bit more, you know, rooted in that those Midwestern roots in terms of a little bit slower, you know, paced. And you know, I think there has been, you know, certainly some changes to that, you know, recently. You know, I don't think Illinois is plodding along, you know, like normal. And you have seen some certain schools come out there and really kind of make an emphasis in terms of finding more skill position talent than there certainly historically has been in the league. But, you know, I think you can also point to just to the bottom of the league, you know, the Rutgers of the world. And, you know, when those teams bottom out in the Big Ten, you know what, they bottom out pretty bad. You know, whether it's a Rutgers, a, you know, UCLA these past couple of years, you know, certainly there's some other test cases there. But, you know, the bottom of the league kind of not pulling its weight. Maybe compared to some of the others, you know, that's probably the one thing you would circle. Certainly in football, you know, I think the case it could probably be made there in basketball as well in terms of, you know, the bottom of the Big Ten really being the issue. And it's not probably for lack of funds at this point, you know, given what these athletic departments are able to spend. You know, it's just, you know, the combination of missing out on a coaching hire or you know, missing out on certain roster decisions. And, you know, that really affecting some of the league. But, you know, the flip side is that that's almost okay. You know, if you are the Big Ten and some of the others in terms of, all right, that at least gives us, you know, a break in that conference schedule. If you are an Ohio State football, if you are a Michigan men's basketball, if you are a UCLA women's basketball, you know, you can almost ease off a little bit in certain games. And so I think there is that weakness of the Big Ten can also end up being a strength in some ways in terms of not being that consistent week in and week out grind in terms of league play that, you know, frankly, may have put the Big Ten behind, you know, in past years, you know, where it was that bottom of the conference was a little bit better, that, you know, historically compared to kind of the middle and the upper tiers that maybe affected them in terms of those national title races. You know, maybe that this can come around and certainly allowed some of those teams to get a little bit of a breather in conference play. But, you know, outside of that, you know, I think that in terms of weaknesses, this is still, you know, 18 program strong, you know, trying to compete. And I think investing the resources, you know, relative to what they have and going about that. And that's certainly improved things top to bottom and kind of taken away some of those weaknesses as well.
I mean, look, I think the weakness remains that the best talent in college football comes from the SEC footprint and not from the Big Ten's footprint. And the Big Ten's footprint is national at this point, but it's lacking the South. And, you know, I think there's a race for, there's a ton of competition for those California elite players. You know, again, there's a lot of wins that benefit the Big Ten, right? There's the, you know, the fact that your teams aren't, you know, the Alabamas, the Georgias can't stack their rosters three deep with the best players from, you know, Georgia, Florida, Louisiana. You know, those guys are on the move in the portal now. There's also, again, the fact that the money and you can pay and you know, overpay in some cases to make guys come to a situation that they may view as less desirable. But that is the one thing that the Big Ten cannot buy their way to. Right. I mean, it would take quite some time to spend enough money to make the athletes be a little bit better from Ohio and Michigan and that region.
Yeah. Yeah. No, fair point. What I view this Big Ten strength as an overall weakness for college football. I'm veering a little bit here, so work with me. But the fact of the matter is they are on the verge of winning the ultimate boardroom power play. Here, if they have gotten almost everybody but the SEC turned in favor of a 24 team playoff in a matter of months, because in January everybody was in favor of a 16 except the Big Ten, and now all of a sudden everybody's in favor of a 24 except the SEC, which is an important exception because they have to go along with it for it to happen. But I am no fan of Tony Petitti. I've pretty well made that clear. I don't think he likes college sports very much. But if he's pulled this off and gotten everybody over to his side, congratulations on that. I'd say it is myopic. It is disastrous. It is offensive. It's gross. I don't want a 24-team playoff. I think it would be ruinous to the regular season and a lot of things that people hold dear about the sport. I think that we would be rewarding mediocrity with playoff bids. I think it would be nothing more than playoff bloat, which we've seen with the basketball tournament. I think it would be a terrible development. But, I mean, if Petitti pulls this off, I've got to give him some level of credit here for somehow buying off everybody else to say, look, hey, you're going to get more teams in too. It's going to help you. Fine. What does it help you actually do? We could debate about that for the next 2.5 hours. We won't do that to the listenership, but I view their myopia as a weakness, but it's actually worked out as a strength to the Big Ten, if you will. All right. League strengths for basketball. And there are many, but Kevin, go ahead there.
Yeah. It just feels like at the moment, a lot of the programs that have, you know, ebbed and flowed a little bit in history are peaking at the right time, right? I mean, Michigan is as high a point as it has been, certainly since the Fab Five. Illinois, which I think all people have always viewed as like a program that is good but not great, is certainly knocking on the door of great at the moment, and has every, I mean, talk about a place that has aligned things incredibly well and has all the resources behind a head coach and Brad Underwood, has everybody buying into a plan that is working. That is a place that could potentially win a national championship, I think, in the next, you know, 3 to 5 years. Obviously, Purdue has maintained a very strong level. I mean, really, the one you're missing is Indiana. And can Indiana basketball get going at the level that you would expect? But I would say for the most part, the brands in the Big Ten, I mean, Wisconsin's been very, very good consistently. The brands of the Big Ten have been great, Izzo and Michigan State. I mean, I think you have to feel really good about the top of that conference at the moment in a way that, you know, look, I think when we talk about the title drought for the Big Ten in basketball, a lot of it was, in my opinion, the league had a lot of good and maybe not enough great. And I think part of this is NIL, part of this is coaching, part of this is, you know, luck and just kind of cyclical wins, et cetera. But I think the Big Ten the last couple years has had a lot more great at the top, and that has given them a chance to kind of keep knocking on the door and, you know, finally break through here this year.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, they've had really, really good teams, and you know, I think in the past, certainly conference play, you know, there was that separation between conference play and the NCAA tournament experience, right? And so many times the Big Ten kind of came up short, but they've consistently gotten great coaching, and now the roster's to come with it. And you know, kind of to Kevin's earlier point, you know, it kind of felt like you know, from a talent recruiting standpoint, like yes, the conference could lean into their Chicago roots and dip into New York City and go to certain places, but now they truly are, you know, kind of a national conference, and I think that has helped kind of maybe some of those other middle tier and lower tier programs in terms of talent. We've seen what Illinois has been able to do across the pond. You know, they're searching and getting talent, getting good talent, you know, from other places that some of the SEC programs maybe are a step behind. You know, certainly this past year that was the case, maybe not 2 years ago when the SEC was you know, overly dominant, but you know, this is a Big Ten program that, or Big Ten conference that, you know, frankly has you know, come around to understanding success in men's basketball, certainly women's basketball as well. It's been you know, notable turnaround. You know, I think in terms of top to bottom, how much better the conference has been, not just in league play, but nationally. You know, in those marquee games in the non-conference, in certainly the NCAA tournament. You know, they've made strides in terms of beating the teams that they frankly came up short, you know, in the past. And so I think it's been notable that they've been able to not only get the national championship and kind of get that monkey off their back, but you know, really make some strides, you know, top to bottom for the league in terms of what they've been able to do on the court.
Yeah, they're in great shape in basketball. For the points you guys mentioned, I would Michigan, Illinois, Michigan State, Purdue, but I would throw in UCLA as a good addition too. I know, you know, despite the Mick Cronin complaint fest that accompanies every road trip across the nation, They're that program's in good shape with Mick. They are. They win games. They get to the tournament. They advance in the tournament. And they are a net add that's been really good. Indiana, you just get the feeling it's coming, right? I mean, they spent a lot of money in the portal, so we'll see how it translates onto the court. And I get the feeling they're going to be there, but you just look across the board, and that is a league that should have, you know, 8, 9, 10 bids, and out of that group, half of them have a chance to go to a Final Four. You know, go to Sweet 16 for sure, and then, you know, a cup, one or two a year should be able to get to a Final Four, and then maybe one of them wins a title. So we saw Michigan break through. So I'm very bullish on Big Ten basketball, but this is a podcast. We have to throw some negative in there too. So Kevin, what are the weaknesses of the league?
I mean, look, the one thing I would say is I think the expansion to 18 teams, you feel it more in basketball than you do in football. And you feel the way the schedule just sort of doesn't feel quite complete. The champion feels somewhat arbitrary because the schedule is so unbalanced. You have all of these travel complaints and quote unquote schedule losses where, oh, you know, we had to get out west in 2 days. And I mean, look, Mick complains a lot. He is not the best messenger for these things, but like, his complaints are valid. Mm-hmm. Like it is objectively very hard to win. Yeah. And we everybody does the sports science, these things, they know the difficulty of the travel. And again, like the lack of some of the rivalries being 2-time-a-year games now. Obviously your best rivalries, your Purdue versus Indiana, you know, across Michigan, Michigan State, you'll get two of that. But there's a lot of really good regional games you just don't get as regularly anymore. And I do think it contributes to a watered down regular season product in the Big Ten. Again, is it worth the trade-off? Probably. And I think the Big Ten does a great job of, you know, playing games and basketball almost every night because of the TV deal, and they have multiple partners. They're able to play, you know, there's like a Big Ten Network game on Monday night, and there's, you know, a couple games on Fox on Tuesday, and there's a Peacock game Wednesday. Like, I think that's been great for the league because it gives it a ton of exposure, but that adds to this sort of like weird watered down scheduling thing. And like, yeah, like, I'm excited that like on a Monday night when there's not a lot of college basketball that there's like a Rutgers Washington game. But like, I don't know if everybody else is. I don't know if the fans of Rutgers are overly into the Rutgers Washington game. So I do worry about that long term, especially once teams are kind of, you know, seasons look sort of on the ropes. Like how much do people care about the, you know, Oregon versus Penn State game in late February?
Yeah, I think the travel component is definitely, you know, leaning into the weakness for the league. And how could it not? You know, frankly, it is difficult. And as a veteran of going, you know, back and forth across the country, you know, quite a bit, I understand those concerns that the coaches bring up, the athletic directors. And I think the league is cognizant of that. You know, they have been trying to mitigate things as best they can to where, you know, if you are, you know, a team on the East Coast and you're going out to the West, you know, you are spending a couple of days there. You're staying in L.A., you know, between games. Not necessarily even if you are playing USC or UCLA back to back, but you're trying to mitigate those things as best they can. And you know, frankly, it is difficult at times, you know, given the TV concerns of the league. You know, they do have a lot of mouths to feed in terms of the inventory, and I think that does you know, contribute to you know, those random 10 p.m. Eastern games that you know, frankly, you know, the teams do not show up for, you know, at times, and that contributes to some of the you know, middle and lower tier losses, you know, in the league, and kind of frankly compacting kind of the middle tier and the lower tier of the league a little bit, probably more than it should be going forward. But you know, Frank, you know, it's still in a good position, right? You know, I think in terms of that balance for the league, in terms of having elite contenders that are still going to be regular national title contenders, as well as some of those teams that are, you know, are quote unquote rebuilding, that you kind of need on the schedule as well to kind of mitigate some of those things in conference play, to where it's not just every single game is a terrible grind. And yeah, I think for the most part, the league has come around, you know, to mitigating things as best they can. And we'll certainly see if that's going to be going to continue to be the case, given the challenges that they have, you know, in terms of having 18 teams in general and all the ills that come with that. On top of, you know, frankly, a lot of programs in, you know, different points in their journey, if you could say that.
Yeah, Kevin, you mentioned that it's a league strength, and you're right. They are on TV every damn night, right? I mean, there is a Big Ten game all the time. I would like to be like at one of the meetings. If you're the guy, and I would be the guy, and I would be laughed out of the room when I bring up, so we're playing on Monday, we're playing on Friday, instead of playing on Saturday or Sunday, we're missing an extra day of class. Nobody gives a damn about going to class anymore. So that's the thing there, is that I've always wondered, you know, how exactly are we working this out academically, other than, again, the great miracle that nobody's ever ineligible anymore. And beyond that, weaknesses, not a lot. You would like to see Ohio State get a little more traction. You know, John Diebler needs to, I think, do a little more work there and get the Buckeyes back up to speed. Indiana, we've talked about, chronic underachiever there. They have spent the money. If they don't get it right this year, I don't know what the heck you're going to do there. Greg Gard needs to get deeper into the tournament. He's had some very good teams, very good seasons, and they get bounced early, fairly often. USC continues to accumulate a lot of talent and doesn't necessarily do a lot with it. So I'd like to see a little bit more from them. But it is a zero-sum game. You got 18 teams, and when a Nebraska rises, somebody else gets pushed down the ranks. My other thing, too, like at some point, I don't really want to see it happen because I love having him around, but at some point Tom Izzo is going to stop coaching at Michigan State. And what happens there? I don't think there's a, you know, clear-cut succession sort of plan that you can come up with there. And he's just been an absolute superstar for 25 years, longer than that, really. So
are we sure that he won't keep coaching forever?
I mean, he might try, you know? I mean, what is he now, 70, something like that, 71? It's possible. Him and his accordion could be around for 10 more years. He's probably sitting there saying, as long as Patino's going, I'm going, you know, that sort of thing. So it's possible. All right, the tentpole Olympic sport, I'll handle this one. I did my research on this. It's very easy. It's very cut and dry. They're good in a lot of sports. But wrestling, 19 straight NCAA championships, 5 straight from Penn State. In that span, they've also had the runner-up 12 times. So that is wrestling central there in the Big Ten. It's Penn State, it's Iowa, it's Ohio State. A lot of good programs there, and they have totally dominated in that sport. Next item here, how secure is the commissioner, Tony Petitti? Brian, what do you think?
Well, I would just follow up and say women's volleyball in particular, too, another big staple. Hey,
the final was 2 SEC schools last year.
I'll give you that. But, you know, the Penn States and the Nebraskas and the, you know, in terms of spending, like you look at some of the spending in terms of some of those non-revenue sports, you know, women's volleyball is up there. So that's a big TV product nowadays for Big Ten Network and others as well. So throw that in there. But in terms of Tony Petitti, I mean, you know, secure is an interesting, you know, phrasing there, Pat, because, you know, I think in terms of the league itself, you know, he's extremely secure and probably more well-liked internally inside the Big Ten than I think any commissioner at this point in terms of the Power Five, in terms of, you know, kind of unity amongst its members. And seeing what certainly some of that has to do with the checks that are rolling in and the strength of the league on the field or on the court, you know, generally that has a lot to do with it. But, you know, there's definitely a dichotomy in terms of the perception of Tony Petitti externally, outside of the Big Ten stakeholders, and internally. And I think it's pretty positive internally. Now, externally, yes, like there's been some slings and arrows, and a lot of those are self-inflicted on Tony Petitti's behalf. You know, he does not speak to the media like us as often as some of his colleagues. You know, I think that contributes to an image of him kind of in his high castle, if you will, a little bit, kind of pulling him away from the day-to-day, being the day-to-day face of a lot of issues. You know, you go back to that presidential committee that met in Washington, D.C., you know, Jim Phillips is out there speaking, Greg Sankey is out there speaking, you know, some of the other commissioners out there. And Tony Petitti, you know, he's happy to be silent and happy to be behind the scenes. And, you know, it is funny because I think there is, you know, you talk with folks about Tony and, you know, internally they say, oh, he's such a great guy. And, you know, they talk about how personable he is and how he's, you know, always following up and he's on the phone and talking with a lot of people. And you just do not get that sense publicly. You know, it is definitely much, very much a dichotomy between his internal persona in the Big Ten and kind of his external perception. And frankly, pushing NCAA tournament expansion, pushing college football playoff expansion like he has, you know, I don't think that has helped his image, you know, in terms of outside of the Big Ten, in terms of how fans, you know, just regular fans, you know, view Tony. So I think that's, you know, the interesting spot that he has put in that is much different from a lot of his peers. But, you know, in terms of how security is, pretty secure at this point. And I think a lot of it, too, has to do with, you know, there's been a pretty big amount of turnover in terms of his actual bosses, in terms of the Big Ten presidents. I think that's important to keep in mind. There's been a, you know, a pretty hefty turnover in terms of some of those names and faces that ultimately hired him back in the day to what the group is now. And, you know, he's probably pretty secure in terms of relative to his peers. And I think that shows up in terms of these Big Ten meetings that we're going to have, you know, this week. I think it's just going to be a lot of kumbaya and a lot of praise for him, even though externally, especially amidst this playoff push, that has not been the case around Tony Petitti.
I'm probably more interested in, like, what is Tony Petitti's long-term plan, and does it involve the Big Ten, right? I think a lot of these guys that come in from outside, and, you know, his predecessor, Kevin Warren, is probably a good example of this, like, wanted to achieve one or two massive kind of tentpole, like, I did this, this is my lasting impact, now it's time for me to get back to professional sports, right? And for Tony Petitti, is that, and college football playoff expansion, like, what are the goals for him? Does he view this as his last job? Does he want to be here for the long term, or is he plotting to, you know, either a commissionership in professional sports or a team president or something like that? I think that I would be intrigued to see kind of the Tony Petitti long term vision, because I do think, particularly as long as things are going well in the Big Ten, it's going to be hard for him to lose the type of support that he seems to have internally at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's all rolling his way right now, clearly. And I think there was, even as recently as last summer, and it's amazing how fast these things change. But last summer, there was some frustration within the league that basically Tony's big stratagem was to promise both Fox and the ADs, hey, we're going to make a ton more money because I'm going to get this 2014 playoff through. And it wasn't happening. But now, woo! Turn it around a year. It's on the verge of happening. It may still get blocked. And we can talk about just the incredible circumstances that led the leaders of college sports to give the entire shape and form of the playoff to two leagues to decide. Incredible. The same people who, you know, also gained control of expanding the NCAA tournament because they threatened they were going to go do their own thing. Anyway, that's neither here nor there, but there were people, there was a lot of frustration with Tony as at last year's football media days. I thought both internally and externally, and it's, I guess he's been very dogged in trying to get his vision to come to reality and is apparently now close to having it happen. So, you know, for whatever that's worth, he is shown some perseverance and some persuasiveness, I guess, that as you said, Brian, it doesn't come across publicly, but in back rooms or whatever, he must be good. And in terms of, yes, like, what's his long-term play? I you know, I looked at him like a lot of guys, I thought, as a potential hit-and-run commissioner, just like you were laying out, Kevin. He is in his mid-60s, I believe, and so, where, you know, what is there a next move, or is this the kind of thing you say?
Oh, you know. Rob Manfred is, you know, his contract is up soon at Major League Baseball, and he's obviously got a tremendous, you know, been in the league office for a long time. I think that's something that is definitely on a lot of people internally in the Big Ten, you know, footprint in terms of the radar as being a possible option for him. So that's going to be one to keep an eye out for sure.
Interesting. Well, yeah, if you bump him into him there at the spa, ask him, well, y'all are getting the facials and the sound therapy and all that. See if we can find out what Tony Petitti's next plan is. All right, moving down the list here. What school swings the biggest stick within the league? Kevin, what do you think?
I mean, I still think it has to be Ohio State. You know, arguably the best football program in America year in and year out. Just a massive brand, a massive property from a TV standpoint that I think every one of the Big Ten's many TV partners wants as much a piece of as possible. And I know there's been a lot written about how it won't be easy necessarily for someone to mimic what Duke basketball just did with Amazon Prime and found a little carve out and squeeze some extra money their way. But, you know, Ohio State seems like the program that would have the most power to try something like that and try to sell off the individual rights to, you know, maybe one or two monster neutral games in the next several years. And, you know, be fascinated to see what a number would look like for that, because they certainly when Ohio State football plays, people watch. I think the ratings numbers are pretty evident with that over the last many years.
Well, I think we can also point to the recent, private capital deal, you know, that the Big Ten was involved with as in terms of who are those power players. Well, yes, in terms of pushing it was Ohio State, and they did not get their way because of Michigan and USC, you know, one of the newbies. You know, I think that has been probably the most interesting development of these last couple of years is certainly Michigan been overly active in terms of conference matters compared to maybe, you know, sitting things aside or letting Ohio State take the lead, even though they might agree with the Buckeyes across state lines there. It's definitely been a top heavy in terms of it's been Ohio State, Michigan historically. But I think you are seeing more voices, step to the table. You know, USC has certainly spoken up. You've seen Penn State be a little bit more active. So, and not just kind of a one conference school, if you will, in terms of following the lead. And I think that's been a notable development in these last, 5, 10, 15 years or so. That wasn't necessarily the case. It was as Ohio State and Michigan go, so does the league. But I think that's changed a little bit, in recent years. And part of that's, you know, just strong personalities at a lot of these other schools also speaking up. You know, you are seeing more, an Illinois president here or an AD at various places, stepping up and speaking a little bit louder than the historical norms. So you've seen Indiana, another school, certainly, and football has certainly helped their case, but they've been more involved in conference matters and coming to the table with ideas and things to do and whatnot. So I think it's been different, for the conference overall, but it's still, let's face it, this is still going to be defined by that Ohio State Michigan duo in terms of the top of the league and where they're ultimately driven to.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I think that without question, Ohio State still is the center of gravity, if you will, of the league, even with the transitions that have gone on. I mean, Gene Smith was as much of a institution of an athletic director and had the gravitas and was on every big NCAA committee. And I felt like you just kind of looked at him as the wise voice of the league, and he's gone. Ross Bjork is in. They've got a new president coming in. That there's been a lot of turnover, but I still think Ohio State just has that institutional momentum. And obviously the change from Urban Meyer to Ryan Day was significant in terms of just keeping the football going. But, I think that you look there, Michigan, obviously a good point, Brian, that they were as important as anybody in knocking down that private equity deal. USC did play a role, which was interesting, but USC should be one of those schools that has a big voice. It's an important institution in general. I think Oregon, Rob Mullins has been there for quite a while and has really established himself as the athletic director there. So I think that's another continuing to a rising impact, I think, probably in league sayings. So, it's still Ohio State's league, so to speak, if you got to cut it down to just one school. But there's probably a little more diversity just for the fact that there's more teams in the league. Okay, brass tacks football-wise, Brian Fisher, how many college football playoff bids will the Big Ten get in 2026?
Well, I feel pretty confident that it's four, you know, at a minimum. And the question is, can they get a fifth? You definitely look at that kind of Indiana, Ohio State, Oregon trio as almost locks at this point, given how strong they are, what the teams they have coming back. I think the calculus for the Big Ten has changed a little bit. In terms of that playoff bid, in terms of what that ultimate number is, simply because the SEC is moving to 9 conference games and they have evened up on that front. And so I think there's going to be certainly more losses to those middle tier SEC teams that, instead of being a 10-2, they are 9-3. And then that pulls in a Michigan, USC, and Iowa, some of those other teams right there. In terms of, all right, now we're debating strength of schedule. Now we're debating how good your quarterback. Now, how good are those offensive defensive lines? Yeah, I think there's going to be a little bit more of a test for the committee this year. And frankly, it probably helps the Big Ten too, that a lot of those top tier teams in the league are playing each other a little bit more often than they have been in the past. There are certain scenarios where teams would be ducking them in terms of the schedule, and you wouldn't quite get that apple-to-apple comparison. So I'm going to say five. I think that's going out on the limb a little bit, especially given the strength in the SEC and what they got coming back at places like quarterback. But I think it's going to be a strong year for the Big Ten, and I think we're going to see that reflected in terms of the number of college football playoff bids they get.
Who's the fourth and who's the fifth?
I think Michigan and USC are probably the best candidates right now in terms of what Kyle Whittingham has coming back. You have an established quarterback in Bryce Underwood. I think they like what they've gotten at the skill positions in terms of what they've inherited and what they've got out of the portal. Some of the freshmen have stepped up in terms of Michigan. Obviously, some big test with that Oklahoma game in the Big House. That's a big one to circle in terms of that college football playoff viability. That game itself might determine in terms of which one of those two leagues, whether it's an Oklahoma type of school or a Michigan team, ends up getting an extra bid. You look at USC and the strength that they had. They have a much more difficult schedule. And even a Penn State out there, which does miss a lot more of those top tier teams. With Matt Campbell coming in, I know expectations are a little bit lower there, in Happy Valley, but that they've got continuity in terms of some of that roster that have played together at Iowa State, that is moving to a new league, but that they seem to like, and the schedule does set up well for them to maybe be a team that surprises. And in terms of your Washington's of the year, what Nebraska is coming back, you can maybe say they're a team that is on the edge. Illinois has certainly been building, that you expect them to take a little bit of a step back. Minnesota continually surprises under PJ Fleck in terms of the level of play that they have been. You never know what they're able to do in terms of the high end. So, it's going to be a very interesting year in the Big Ten. And frankly, it's probably going to come down to those margins. I would tend to lean towards Michigan and USC being those two teams that could also sneak into the college football playoff race. But it's going to be a fascinating race, I think, overall, just in terms of looking at this conference. You have those kind of big three for sure. Yeah, those next tier of contenders, and then you have everybody else after that. Makes for a fascinating year in the Big Ten for sure.
I mean, I think the league, I've got four bids, the three big ones and a fourth floater, which I think, I think Michigan's is a good bet for. I think USC is also a good bet for. Like, I think the league needs the top three to lose a couple games, right? Like I think about last year and looking at schedules and people plotting out, could Illinois be a playoff dark horse? They have this big home game against Ohio State. It should be a massive one. The league needs the Illinois of the world to win that game occasionally. And I think, quite frankly, the last couple of years, the best of the best in the Big Ten have been too bulletproof. And, I think for the league's sake, both from a interest standpoint and also from a playoff standpoint, like you need tier two and tier three on your home field to be able to pull off the quote unquote unthinkable once in a while. And that's how, whether it's a Penn State this year, a USC, even working further down, these teams with manageable schedules. Washington is a great example of this. I believe if you look at Washington's schedule for this season and the opportunities that they have, the schedule looks really light. And then all of a sudden it's like, all right, well, we've got a huge one at the end of the year at home against Indiana on November 21st. Like, those are the games that get you in the playoff. Those are the games that make you allow you to leave no doubt. And I think when you look at some of the teams in this conference to for it to really consolidate bids and take 4, 5, 6, it's going to take some upsets and some you know, all right, we're 7-point dogs at home. What do you got? What do you got, Damond Williams?
Yeah, I think that's a very good point that you need a second tier of teams that can win enough games with the chips down and everybody watching to all of a sudden get yourself that fourth, fifth team in the playoff. I'm going to say they get four. I do think Ohio State, Indiana, Oregon are the obvious three. I waffle. I like Washington a bit in that spot for the fourth spot. But USC and Michigan certainly will be there. We'll see if somebody else can rise up, you know, and butt their way in. But that's kind of where I'm seeing things there. The regular season continues to be just hard to pin down when nobody plays. They you know, there's just not enough cross-pollination of who's playing each other to know for sure who all your best teams are. But that's what conferences sign up for when they go to 18 teams, is you just have a hard time coming up with balanced schedules. All right, last thing here on the Big Ten. In 5 years, the Big Ten will be blank. Kevin?
I'll go with rich. The money, the checks are going to keep flowing. I think there will only continue to be more opportunities for the league to continue to build up massive revenue streams, whether that be through kind of the traditional TV rights. And I think their deal is up 2030, correct me if I'm wrong, or that of thereabouts. But also, again, the opportunities that they'll continue to have with some of the, you know, second and third tier financial opportunities that I think the Big Ten is well positioned to cash in on. Again, this is a national conference that is dominating at the top of the big revenue sports. I think this is still an opportunity for growth. And it does seem like, you know, again, criticize Tony Petitti however you like. They're finding ways to continue to tap into more revenue streams, playoff expansion, et cetera, that will make the Big Ten's coffers even a bit richer than they were before.
I would say still locked into a war with the SEC. You know, this is still, you know, an SEC Big Ten battle. We've seen that these past couple of years. I think we're going to continue to that be the case. You know, these two conferences, it is a power two in terms of the resources, in terms of, you know, the coaching talent, in terms of the rosters that you're building. You want to talk about $40+ million football rosters? All right, there's going to be quite a few of them in the Big Ten. And that's going to continue to be the case in men's basketball in terms of big spenders. You know, this is going to be Big Ten versus the SEC. That's a narrative that has certainly developed these last couple of years as expansion has taken hold. But it's true on the field, and I think we're going to continue to see that be the case. So I'm curious to see. You know, certainly there will be some impacts in terms of, right, what is the size of the playoff? You know, will that impact the Big Ten in terms of actually winning it all? You know, the same in men's basketball, especially with NCAA tournament expansion coming and potentially some extra pass there for additional teams from the conference. But, you know, all signs point to this continuing to be a conference that's right there in terms of the top and battling it out from the SEC for ultimate superiority in college athletics.
Yeah, I mean, they should still be at the top of the heap. My hope is that there is still an actual full unified heap and that we have a, you know, 130 school FBS and we have a 360 school NCAA Division I, and that the Big Ten has not been vital in wrecking all of that. I am pessimistic about the way things are going, but that's my hope. We'll see. The Big Ten is going to be fine no matter what, which is another reason why continuing to take a wrecking ball to things drives me crazy. Like they're doing this when they don't really need to do it, but that's where we are. So we will see all things Big Ten. We'll see what comes out of the spa treatments there in California. Brian will have updates, so be looking for his stories from out there. One other story we've got to get to, fellas, because we always got to get to one more story here. This is kind of Big Ten adjacent, if you will. And Brian, this is your sport. This is soccer or football, as they say over there. The Telegraph UK reports that William Salt, a first-team performance analysis intern, was found loitering next to a tree recording Middlesbrough training. We've got a Connor Stallions of English soccer. This is the next thing. This is Connor Stallions in Europe. So the Southampton analyst at the center of Spygate has been unmasked as more rivals launch investigations into feared espionage. So Salt caught in the act. They got a picture of him standing behind a tree with his phone, like trying to get video. Not very, not all that stealthy, but then again, neither was Connor Stallions. Brian, this is your sport. Tell us what the hell is going on. If this is an epidemic, if this is a scandal, what's happening over there?
Well, it's not the first time that we've had a kind of Connor Stallions type of scandal for spying involved in European soccer, and then certainly not in the UK. And it's funny, like there is like I think it's The Athletic published a picture of the guy like by a tree, just holding up his iPhone, and it's a big deal. Look, this is a big deal because this is both teams are involved in the championship playoffs. You know, if you go through that, you can get into the Premier League. That's it's worth hundreds of millions of dollars for your football club. So it is a big deal. And I mean, there's been talk of certainly Middlesbrough has called for Southampton to be suspended for that and not end up playing and to be kicked out of the championship playoffs. So it is a massive deal. I think the best detail though, is that apparently the guy went to a coffee shop or whatever. And like, that's how they know that it was him. And so he like used his credit card at a coffee shop at a golf club that the Middlesbrough owner, ended up owning. So like it's a big time scandal across the pond, certainly, and rightfully so. I think Middlesbrough has a right to be upset about this one, even though in terms of what are you actually gaining from filming a training, I don't think it's that much, but at the end of the day they are right, as this is like Spygate number two or three over across the pond. They're all understandably upset about this, and we'll see what ultimately ends up happening, because this is a pretty big deal in terms of where these two teams end up playing next year.
Kevin, what do we do with William Salt here?
I mean, I want this guy in the media. I mean, Connor Stallions has positioned himself well. He's made quite a career. He's had his statements. I need to read this guy's manifesto. I need to know everything there is to know about this guy. And I also need to know, what defense does he have? You know, he says you just mentioned it, Brian, that you bought the coffee on the golf course. I mean, I need to see, did he play nine? Does he have clubs? I mean, Connor Stallions would have purchased golf clubs and been carrying a golf bag with him, so no one would have noticed. I think this guy's a little sloppy and could have learned a thing or two from our favorite Michigan man.
Yeah. Of course, Connor, he wasn't all that stealthy with the ticket buying himself, but we could have, and a little bit like a disguise or something. You know, Connor, when he disguised himself as a Central Michigan staffer, this guy, he needs to learn. He needs to read Connor's manifesto and or talk to him and say, you got to teach me how to be a better spy. So some good nostalgic talk there for the Michigan fans. They love the Connor Stallions era. They loved it because they won a championship, but we'll see what happens with old William Salt. We'll keep you apprised on that. That could be an ongoing saga here. That's the show. Thank you for listening. Watch us on YouTube, download us, leave us a review, all those things. And we will be back next week. SEC. Oh boy, is it going to be a big week for the SEC. So check us out next week. We'll talk to you all later.